Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Friday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM. The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of things. The MLB playoffs have reached the championship series with a win last night by the Dodgers, 2-1 over the Giants. What a great game that we missed while we were watching a great game. The Dodgers went 2-1 over the Giants. That season series, I think it ends up, that would be 22-22 in 24 games, separated by like a run. It's just crazy how close LA and San Francisco were this year, but Cody Bellinger, game-winning single in the top of the ninth inning. Max Scherzer came on for the first career save to send the Dodgers back to the NLCS, the rematch against the Braves, and then that ALCS will be Houston and Boston. So a little bit of MLB playoffs coming up. Amazing stat about Bellinger against the Giants this year and how unlikely that hit was. Also, the NFL week. It's a week in the NFL. You know, normally there's a bunch of marquee matchups, a handful at least. This week, not so much. Just really a few games with teams with winning records. And one of those is Green Bay and Chicago. How fired up are we about that one? The Raiders and Denver, really? The Raiders? How much longer are they going to have a winning record after what happened this week? So,
no.
Not the greatest week, which usually means there's some surprises and good teams get beat by bad ones. So we'll talk about the NFL. College football, huge game down in Austin. Oklahoma State going down there. Anxious for me, how Texas reacts after last week. Can Oklahoma State kind of use Spencer Sanders in the way that OU used Caleb Williams in the second half with his legs? And then the winner of this one's going to have a great chance and a huge leg up in the Big 12 title race. OU TCU, we'll actually talk about the game. No one's really done that around this state anyway all week long. I'll be interested to see just how much of a leash Caleb Williams has. Is he going to run the offense full? Will it be kind of simplified a little bit in his first career start? Can TCU exploit OU's obvious weakness in the secondary? TCU's got some guys that are questionable to play that probably need to play for them to have a chance to win that game tomorrow night in Norman. And then, of course, we'll hit the high school football from last night. Fun night at Big Elk Stadium. For the first time since 2011, the Elks beat Weatherford, and it was just a second-half avalanche of points that Weatherford was unable to be able to stave off. And then Merritt, I went back and watched a little bit of that one against Moreland. Had a chance to tie it in the fourth quarter with a two-point conversion that didn't happen, and Moreland beats Merritt 28-26. So we'll talk about those two games, what it means in the grand scheme of the district race for the playoffs coming up here as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line, 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in, 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other, download the Paragon Communications app. That app has all things Paragon. With the three radio stations at Elk City, that's KECO, Cool 94, and KADS right here on KADS. You've also got the Penny News in that app. Check out this week's edition of the Penny News right now, thepennynews.com through the app, or go pick up a free copy of the paper edition of the Penny News at your local newsstand. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, off till next Friday. Thursday for Big Elk TV is the Elks travel down to Cash on Thursday night to play the Bulldogs, a game that could essentially clinch a playoff spot for Elk City if they can find a way to win that one. And then Merritt is on the road. I can't remember. Is it at Burns Flat? Nope, it's at Thomas first. At Thomas next week. That's a Friday night game, though. So you'll have Big Elk TV Thursday, Paragon TV Friday with Merritt at Thomas there in Class A District 1 action. A big win needed there for Merritt to keep themselves in the race for that fourth spot in the playoff pecking order. Actually, a couple of big weeks for Merritt coming up, I think, with Burns, Flatdale City, and Thomas all 1-3 there in the battle for fourth. So you can do that on Friday, Paragon TV. We've also got Skinny on Sports podcast. If you miss us entirely, you can go back and listen. A couple of different ways to do that. KADSAM.com or iTunes. And if you do it on iTunes, you might as well subscribe. And when you subscribe, you are alerted when a new podcast drops. Good morning, Jared Atha.
How are you?
Seems like I was just with you.
I know. We had a good time last night.
Man, did we. It was a lot of fun. With that game here at Big Elk Stadium. It was a game that started out, I think, like you and I thought it might, with Elk City going up 2 touchdowns, a good drive by the offense, and then a pick six from Alex Cherry, 14-0, and it looked like the route was on. And then Weatherford did a really nice job of settling things down. They got the run game going in that first touchdown drive. Malachi Johnson hit the long run for 45. They got Weatherford down inside Big Elk territory. And then the pass out to Nixon on 4th and 17 looked like the Elks had kind of, batted that drive away. And Valines hits the freshman C.J. Nixon just a jump ball over on the far sideline that he was able to position himself, made a great catch. Weatherford scores to make it 14-6 because they had the extra point blocked, which was such a weird. I wonder if anybody could tell us what happened, because they had one kicker out there ready to go. And then the official stopped the play right as the ball was snapped. He went ahead and kicked it. And then they put him to the sideline, and the reaction from the coach that was talking to the kid from Weatherford was the problem was a problem. You know what I'm saying? It was just the reaction that we could see was like, I can't believe you just did that type of thing. And so then, another kicker comes in, the Elks block that extra point, but Weatherford goes ahead and scores again. In the second quarter, makes it 14-12. They don't get the 2-point conversion, and there was a little bit of an uneasy feeling because Weatherford had kind of stopped the Elk City run game at that point, kind of sending guys, making Dalen make moves in the backfield, which we hadn't seen very much this year.
Right.
Normally, the Elks have been really good on the offensive line, and so it's 14-12. Elk City gets the ball back with 6 or 7 minutes left in the first half. And there's an uneasy feeling. You can kind of sense it. And then the Elks just turned it on. The go score, Price has the 31-yard trap play run for a touchdown. The Elks defense stiffens, forces a punt. Offense gets it back, kicks a field goal right before half. And then it's 24-12. Going into halftime, you feel a little bit better if you're in the brown and white. And then just the lightning bolt that struck on the opening kickoff of the third quarter with Marino Rivera Noblet taking it back 90, and then it was 31-12, and you got the sense of, okay, that's enough points. I don't think Weatherford can get to 31. So you felt good about winning the game, and then the turnovers, the onslaught of turnovers caused by the Big Elk defense just ballooned that score. It ends up at 1.66-12. Elk City had ripped off 52 straight after Weatherford made it 14-12, and it didn't take long. That was the thing about what happened.
There was a lot of time when 60 – points were put up. There was still a good amount of time on that clock.
Yeah.
And the turnovers are a big reason why. And I've always been, usually the offense in any team that's having success, the offense gets the praise. But, and the defense kind of takes second fiddle to all that. But I was very, very impressed with the defense last week against Chickasha. I think, what did we see? 3 times Chickasha got into the red zone, and they only came away with 8 points because of the Big Elk defense, able to turn them away. Last night, they were forcing turnovers left and right. And that defense is, it's a nice compliment. Not just a nice compliment. It's a huge compliment to that offense. It's already very steady and dynamic in its own right. But they can thank the defense last night for putting them in a great position all second half long. I was very impressed with the defense. Very impressed.
It was almost like a wash, rinse, repeat situation there.
Yeah.
From the middle of the third quarter through about the first two. Yeah, you're right. It was 66 with like 10 minutes, 10 and a half to go in the fourth quarter. And it would just seem like Elk City would score a touchdown. Nike would kick it into the end zone. Weatherford would get it at the 20. They'd run a couple plays. The Elks would force a turnover. And then Elk City would go down and score. And then that would just – that same scenario played out about 4 times in a row.
Right.
To the point of – it was 45-0 in the second half, with basically a quarter and a couple of minutes off the clock. It was one of those things that, you know, even on a couple of good plays that Weatherford had offensively, with Hoffman broke through the line, one of the very few times where he had space to run, goes up the middle, makes one man miss, he's into the secondary, and Cooper Patton comes over and knocks it loose, and the Elks force a turnover there on what was looking to be a pretty good play offensively for Weatherford, which those were pretty few and far between in the second half because of the defense that Elk City kind of stiffened. And it's one of those years, I mean, that happens everywhere where, you know, you're just in between classes a little bit. You know, there's some players, you know,
yeah.
Johnson and Hoffman, and they've got some skill guys for Weatherford sure as seniors. But the story for me for them was as the game wore on, and then you started seeing all these freshmen show up out on the field for them that look like they're going to be good. Nixon at the very top of that list.
Right.
I mean, that dude's 6'4". They list him at 197. He looked bigger than that to me, just from the press box where our vantage point was. That guy looks like a dude that people are going to be coming out watching that coach on Saturdays here in a couple years. I mean, he just looks the part of a big, skilled athlete already as a freshman.
If they looking towards the future, if Weatherford plans around him, they could have some success. And we've heard that they have, and so do we, I mean, here at Elk City, that eighth grade freshman area right there has some up-and-coming guys. So this game could be really fun for the next few years between these two teams.
And Clinton in there as well, I think, is on that same track with those kind of grades.
Feels like the late 90s.
Are going to be, it could be a lot of fun. But on the Elk side, defensively obviously was awesome. I thought the offensive line worked through some stuff that Weatherford was doing, started picking things up better. And we've seen this for most games, even as much as Bethany in the loss that the Elks have. It just, as the game wears on and the Elks are committed enough to give Dalen the ball enough to where by the end of the third quarter, fourth quarter time, it gets hard to keep on wanting to tackle him. And I think we saw that last night.
That's the definition of getting stronger.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I say that a lot, but that's he doesn't get weak because you're right. I mean, it's harder and harder to tackle him later in the game, and just because he just stays that rock. You know, he just stays that tough kid that starts the game all the way through the game. I'm just very overly impressed with him and his work ethic this season.
Yeah, some of those 4, 5, 6 yard carries turned into 12, 15, 20, 30 yard
carries.
And
I'm glad he didn't get frustrated because, like that, they're really zeroing in on him in the first of the game, making it tough for him. And I'm glad he kept getting the ball. And then I'm glad he kept running with that intensity like he did in the first quarter or first of the game, and it paid off for him.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. We were after the game, 24 carries, 177, and 2 touchdowns is what I had Dalen for, and it felt like, man, kind of a normal night. Not a great night, or maybe even a little bit below average night for Dalen, and that's just how crazy his stats have been so far this year. 1286 and 177. What's that? 1463. So you're talking about a guy that's less than 300 yards away, or right around 300 yards away from breaking the all-time school rushing record for a single season, and he's still got 3, likely at least 4 games to be able to do that. Because with the results last night, you look at the standings in 4A1. Clinton's on top at 4-0. Bethany, Newcastle play tonight, so we don't know the result of that one yet. So you got 4-0 Clinton. Bethany's the only other undefeated at 3-0. Then the Elks stand by themselves at 3-1. Newcastle has a chance to get there tonight if they can win at Bethany. If not, then the Elks are solo third, one game behind the two undefeateds in Clinton and Bethany. Now, they've already had their shot at Bethany and lost to the Broncos. They still have a shot at Clinton to hand them a loss themselves, which would help with tiebreakers and all that kind of thing later on down the line. They don't have Chickasha and Cash's result in yet. That was, what, 53-28 final, I think. Chickasha ended up beating Cash. And so Chickasha even 2-2, Cash down in the cellar with Weatherford at 0-4. That game that we thought was going to be so important next week loses a little bit of importance because it's hard to imagine a 3-4 team making the playoffs in this district. Cash now 0-4, Weatherford 0-4. I think you could pretty well eliminate both of those teams just because of their records and the fact that, well, when you look at Elk City, they're one win away from guaranteeing a winning record in the district. And so, to me, next Thursday night at Cash, a win clinches a playoff spot.
It's becoming more clearer and clearer. Yeah, I think that's right. And Cash, they held on with Chickasha as long as they could. It was a 4-point game at one point. Then I blink and you see the final and it's 53-28. So we talk about turnovers. I bet there's some turnovers involved there. And okay, you know, I hate comparing wins and comparing how one team played against one team, you know, against us or whatever. But we've made some good teams, I think, look pretty normal. Chickasha being one of them. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think Chickasha's better than the 31-8 score indicates against Elk City. I think that's right. Because look at the results they've had against everybody else outside of Clinton.
Yeah. I mean, and then Elgin, we go and beat them by 50. And we thought it was so crazy that they went and beat Weatherford.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe Elgin, you know, they're okay, but, you know, not a playoff team. Point is, I mean, Elk City, listen, I keep going back to that Bethany game and the mistakes – or the missed opportunities that Elk City had. And I almost want to say, man, one other crack at them.
Yeah, you'd like to play that game again, but don't get the opportunity to do it.
Makes you wonder, what if that game was in Elk City?
Yeah,
a little bit more comfortable feeling for Elk City. I don't know. I just hate that's that one game and that one loss, and it wasn't that bad of a loss statistically, obviously. And then, like, the missed opportunities. Man, there's right there, you know, low-hanging fruit. Just couldn't capitalize on them.
Well, and the problem is what that loss ends up costing you. If it is the difference between second and third.
Right.
And what that costs you. I mean, you look at the 4A2 standings right now. Blanchard's out on top by themselves at 4-0. Tuttle plays tonight. And then Cushing, who was the preseason number one in a few of the polls, is third in that district. Now, they haven't played Blanchard yet, and so that'll kind of sort itself out. Last night, Hera beat Ada. So that district's kind of separating the same way that this one is, with the, you know, four teams here and then the bottom four teams there. So you've kind of got an idea of who it's going to be, just not sure what the order is going to be in to see what the matchups are. But, you know, at this point, if you're Elk City, I think you can – start kind of zeroing in on one of three, Blanchard, Tuttle, Cushing, and then if you're able to beat Clinton, now we can talk about Hera maybe too. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because that'd be the only way I think you end up seeing Hera is as the district champion, which would guarantee two games at home, and that would be something we'd have to go back in the annals of Big Elk history to find the last time that's happened. I'm going to guess 1998,
so,
just off the top of my head.
So to possibly get a number two spot in the district, rooting for Newcastle tonight.
Absolutely.
And then obviously, take care of business against Cash, take care of business against Newcastle, and then we would assume Clinton beating Bethany, that gives them their second district loss. If we can just get through this, well, that's the problem. Man, if you could beat Clinton.
Well, the idea here with Bethany losing to Newcastle is you might have a three-way tie for second with two losses.
That's where, so then district points would come into the tie, break it.
That's right.
Break the tie. Yeah. It's possible. Number two is possible. Shoot, number one's possible. You never know. Clinton could slip up a couple times.
Well, and that's the thing, though, with the game still out there with Elk City and Clinton, Elk City's the one that has the chance to put the one loss to Clinton, mm-hmm. which it's going to be pretty interesting if that were to happen. And, you know, if Bethany, say they win tonight, you're going to have a situation where if the Elks can beat Clinton and run the table – then you're going to be rooting for Clinton
right,
to beat Bethany as far as a district title. But on the other way around, if Bethany were to beat Clinton, that gives the Red Tornadoes two losses, and the Elks are guaranteed the second seed. You know, they wouldn't win the district because – oh
yeah, I don't know if that's us.
Yeah, I think it's out. I think it's in the Oklahoma City area.
Huh. It was a weather thing.
Must have been a test.
It was absolutely a test because there's nothing on the radar.
A test. Anyhow, like we were saying, if the Elks can upend Clinton, run the table, finish with one loss, then you've really got a no lose situation. Well, you may be, depending on the district points, because if all three are tied with one loss, assuming Clinton beats Bethany, and Bethany runs, you know, everybody just, that's the way that happens. Everybody wins the rest of the games. then it's a three-way tie for the district championship. So somebody's going to host two playoff games at home, and somebody's going to go on the road round one. You know, and so if you're as much as you'd love to win the district title, and that's the goal, obviously, you probably wouldn't mind seeing Bethany beat Clinton if you're an Elk City fan, because then that guarantees the second seed and not having to travel week one.
Right.
On the other hand, depending on where the district points are at that time, maybe you've got a better chance than what it looks like right now. And those points are going to get closer in the event one of those two teams loses, because right now all they got is wins, and they're piling up points. They haven't had the negative yet because of a loss. So interesting situation, but it does look like with a win at Cash, you can book it. The Elks are going to be in the playoffs.
Yep. I think that's it.
District A1, Merritt, man, that's 2 weeks in a row, or two out of three, that they put up a huge fight. Sandwiched in between is the beatdown of Sayre, which, by the way, everybody's doing. Second straight week that Sayre handed an opponent their first win of the season. Ooh. Last week it was Merritt. This week it was Thomas. But the Oilers came up just shy. Second time in district that went for two. Would have been a win against Texoma at 8-7. Would have been a tie. Get the game tied with about 7 minutes left last night against Moreland. Both two-point conversions fail, and the Merritt Oilers fall to 1-6 at the 28-26 loss to Moreland. Man, it sure feels like Coach Richardson and the guys have figured some things out from the first of the season, and that team's getting better and better and better. And when you look at their schedule, they've got at Thomas, they've got at Fairview, and then host Burns Flat Deal City. Merritt seems like, with the ball that they're playing right now and the schedules that everybody else has, well, probably not. Texoma still gets to play home against Sayre and at Thomas. So that's probably a 3-4. And then, man, that 1 point may come back to bite you in a district, in a playoff or a tiebreaker situation. But the Oilers playing some pretty good ball out there right now.
Yeah, you always like what Coach Richardson can bring. You know, even if you see what their record would be without paying attention to it, if you knew who's coaching them, you knew, well, man, they're a tough team. Better be ready for him. And he always makes good midseason adjustments to give his team the best opportunity to win. But they just come up short twice against some really good teams in the district. But it's nice to see him fight. And I think there's opportunities for him, you know, against Thomas, against Fairview, you never know. And, you know, Burns Flat. Burns Flat's kind of been flat lately, pardon the pun. But so there's opportunity there too.
Yeah, you almost wish it was Hooker or Moreland. Well, it couldn't be Moreland after last night, but because Fairview's been the one team in district play anyway that has dominated every game they've played. Moreland and Hooker have had some close calls. Last night being one for Hooker, 35-34 loss at Burns Flat. And that was a game they controlled most of it, and then all of a sudden it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
There's the Eagles with a chance. So 3 weeks left. It's going to kind of start separating itself out even more with these two districts. But after last night, I think the takeaway for us is Elk City's one win away from clinching a playoff spot, and then it's jockey for position and figure out a way to avoid having to go to Tuttle or Cushing. And the way to do that, or the fastest way to do that, is win the rest of your games.
Yeah.
What do you think about Bethany and Newcastle tonight? I think Newcastle has a chance.
And it's at Bethany?
Yes, it's at Bethany.
I don't know. I mean, I see the Newcastle team that, you know, beat up on Weatherford. But then I just saw Weatherford last night, so I can see why that happened. And then I see the Newcastle team that, you know, really gave, outside of the Heritage Hall loss, really gave Clinton their toughest game, but still lost by 2 touchdowns. I think there's a chance. I think it's a one-score game either way. I just can't put my finger on the pulse on this one. I can't figure it out. I think because it's at Bethany, there's a slight edge there. But then I keep thinking, Bethany lost to Woodward. How? I just don't know how. And they're still in, you know, top of the district with a chance to win it. I don't know. I think it'd be one score either way, but because it's at Bethany, I'll lean them by what? 3.
Yeah, I think
they do have a kicker.
They do have a kicker. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Dax Jaggers. It's a hard name to keep saying right and not want to say Jax Daggers.
Or Mick Jagger.
He may throw daggers tonight. Don't forget, you got about a, well, let's see, 25 and a half hours to get your Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Picks in for this week. Needing Jay Sampson to come back to the pack a little bit here. 9 out of 10 last week. Woo. That's what I need. Matter of fact, never mind. You can do whatever you want to. I need a 9 out of 10 myself this week. Hovering right on the 50-50 line, 30-30. I've been 5-5 for 4 weeks in a row now. Had a 6-4, a 4-6, and 4 straight 5-5s.
This is why we don't live in Vegas.
If Tyler was, well, listen, 50-50 is pretty good. Problem is, you're losing the juice. If Tyler was collecting juice off of me, I'd be up $3,000, down $3,000, and then owing $300, the 10%. So I need to get a little bit better. Where are you at? What's your record, Jared?
25-35.
5 under. Well, you're not.
I mean, it's not horrible, but I'm, no. What am I ranked in our group?
Well, let's look. You're on the second page. You got to hit that 2 to get to yours.
33 out of 70-something.
33 out of 73. So you're better than most. In the top half.
Yeah, I'm just happy to be around and floating around.
You're just a good week away from 500.
I got a feeling about this week.
You're a good week away from 500.
Got a feeling.
Uh-oh.
That's a lot of points for Cincinnati and Central Florida.
So be sure to make your picks before 11 o'clock in the morning. Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Contest. People before property is the motto down there at Western Oklahoma Realty. Tyler Harrison and Robbie Allen, the whole gang down at Western Oklahoma Realty. Appreciate them hanging out with us, being along for the ride here in the College Pick'em Contest. One of the games on the list is Oklahoma State traveling down to Austin to play the Texas Longhorns. It's one of only two matchups of ranked teams this week, with Kentucky and Georgia being the other. Oklahoma State a 6.5-point favorite down in Austin. Texas coming off that, what you would think could possibly be a demoralizing loss to Oklahoma, and the way it happened, blowing that large lead. Oklahoma State had the week off. Before the bye, they really had gotten the run game going. Jaylen Warren had asserted himself as the guy in the backfield for Oklahoma State. And then, you know, they were able to, you know, Spencer Sanders had his game against Baylor where he tried to throw it away with 3 picks. And Oklahoma State's defense and run game was good enough to keep them out of that hole. And so the Cowboys still undefeated at 5-0. Texas 4-2. I think this is a fascinating game. OSU has had Texas's number as of late over the last decade, mm-hmm. especially down in Austin. They've won a bunch of games down there, a place that a lot of people haven't. And so Oklahoma State, I'm kind of surprised that the line is as high as it was to start. I'm going to go ahead and kind of give your thoughts about it as I look at the current lineup for that one.
It opened at 6.5, didn't it? The current. Yeah, I think the big thing for Texas or for OSU going into it, they've had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. I think that's a big thing. They're probably catching Texas. We've talked about this. Texas, and I know we're both interested in how do they respond. It could be one of, I mean, obviously two things. They're upset with how last week went against OU, and they want to prove that they're still a really good team, or they're still deflated, and you could let one loss beat you twice, and they could lose to OSU. But, yeah, I kind of forgot because of all the craziness of last weekend. I forgot OSU didn't even play. So, again, they've had 2 weeks to prepare for Texas. And you give Mike Gundy a couple weeks to prepare for a team, he can put up a good game plan. And they're playing really good. And let me put it this way. You give them 2 weeks, and with the way this defense has been playing this season, I think you could really scheme how to defend Texas in 2 weeks. I think he could come up with a really good game plan. Big opportunity for OSU, and they've had a lot of success down there in Austin, and they don't let that intimidate them. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting the lack of respect, considering the rankings and the records between these two teams, that OSU is getting one in the Vegas sphere, being such an underdog. Scores and Odds has it currently, Texas is a 4-point favorite, so not quite as many as what our game is. Of course, that comes out at the first of the week, and it's the, you know, never changes on our game. But then you look at the matchup predictor on ESPN's FPI, the Football Power Index. Texas, they have Texas as a 79% chance to win this game. It doesn't feel that way to me.
No.
With my own eyes. Now, you know, that's, you know, FPI likes Texas a bunch. I think they had them at 7 or 8 this week, even after the loss to Oklahoma. So there's a lot, there's analytics there that that the computers like. You know what I don't like? Texas's defense sucks.
Yeah, that.
And it cannot stop the run.
That's been the consistent thing with them all season long. It can't stop the run. Yes, they are horrible against the run.
They came in last week, what, 93rd in rush defense in the country, and they gave up over 300 to Oklahoma. I'm guessing, I'm no statistics major, but I'm guessing that made them not improve as a team run defense statistically in the country.
Right. You're not. What's going on?
I was looking to see if I could find that number. Anyhow, and so that I think one thing that that Spencer Sanders can do consistently is run the football, and so I wouldn't be surprised to see Oklahoma State scheme up a little bit of things, kind of like Oklahoma did with Caleb Williams. How much of that, we'll see. I mean, they're different guys. They're different players. They're different systems and all that kind of stuff. But I do think that there's maybe a little bit of a blueprint there for Oklahoma State to get Sanders on track with the run game outside of just Jaylen Warren. And then defensively for OSU, I will say this is probably the best offense they've played. You know, that's the thing that I took away from Texas is, man, they have playmakers. Xavier Worthy at the receiver spot. Now, he'll probably be running. We'll see OSU's defense. We'll see OSU's secondary, what it's like. He may not be running around against Jaden Davis all day like he was last week, to the tune of over 250 and a couple of touchdowns. But you know, this is it's really weird because it feels like, you know, last week we talked about strength on strength with Texas running it, no use stopping the run. This week it feels like it's strength on weakness, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're what?
Like OSU's run game versus Texas's run defense?
Yeah, I was going to
go. It's
got to
be a huge advantage. But on the other side, the you know, OSU's defense is definitely better than it's been, and it's maybe the best in the Big 12. I don't think we've seen it tested just yet, and I think that's going to happen tomorrow.
You mentioned the Worthy thing going up against OSU's secondary. That intrigues me. Because you're right. He's not going to be running all over the place like he did against OU. OSU's secondary is a little better.
It has been.
That's going to be, you know, and you're right. It'll answer a lot of questions of, is it the best defense in the Big 12? Or is Texas offense going to exploit some things or going to reveal some things against OSU's defense? Very intriguing.
Here it is. Texas ranks 106th nationally in total defense.
That's just straight up not good.
And it's twice.
You have to think that the statistics would say OSU's going to have a day.
They twice surrendered more than 300 yards rushing to Arkansas and to Oklahoma. Jaylen Warren has averaged 155 and 32 carries over the previous three games. How about this? An OSU win would mark the first time the Cowboys have beaten three consecutive ranked opponents. Because you think about this. Hmm. Kansas State was ranked when OSU beat them. Baylor was ranked when OSU beat them. And now Texas is still ranked at 25th. So first time in program history. That's crazy. You'd beat a ranked team three times in a row. Three weeks in a row. Three opponents in a row would be ranked wins. I'm fascinated by the results of this game because whoever wins this has a big-time leg up in the race for Dallas and the Big 12 title game, especially if it's the blaze orange and not the burn orange. If Oklahoma State can win this game, they've got wins already over Kansas State, over Baylor, over Texas. You know, now you're looking at Iowa State and OU. It's what we think are the contenders to be there. That puts them way ahead of the curve so far in the Big 12 title game race.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned Iowa State. Iowa who?
Iowa State. Watch out. Watch out. Everybody quit talking about them. You know what happens when everybody quits talking about Iowa State? They start playing better football.
It's a script for them, isn't it? That's usually how it is. They lose a couple early in the year, and then they're going to run off and win. Now, who they got tomorrow? Like Kansas State?
Yeah, I believe they do have Kansas State tomorrow. But they still host Texas. They host OSU as well. They have to go to Norman.
It's not like it's going to get easier for them. They still got the Oklahoma schools. And, they still got Texas, too.
Mm-hmm. Over in Norman.
Iowa State could easily finish fourth in this league.
They could. They could easily finish first, too.
That's true.
OU hosting TCU on Owen Field tomorrow night. Everybody can't wait to see what happens when Caleb Williams trots out there and plays a full game as the starter. You know, you've been maybe a little bit hesitant with the idea of Patterson having a week to actually prepare for Williams and not for Rattler, a luxury that Texas didn't have going into that game last week. And so we'll see what happens if a defensive mind like Gary Patterson has a chance to break down tape and figure out ways to stop him. TC's run defense is horrid. And that plays right into Oklahoma, what is starting to maybe become a strength. You know, the offensive line struggled early, but go back to the Kansas State game, OU ran it good. Go back, and then obviously last week, OU ran it good. And a thing that it almost feels a little bit counterproductive to worry about the first few games, because the threat of Caleb Williams' legs just unlocks this offense for Lincoln Riley. You know, when Oklahoma can turn around and hand it off, Lincoln Riley's offense is hard to stop. When Oklahoma can do that, plus the quarterback can run the way that Williams appears to be able to run, that's when it becomes more unstoppable. And we saw that in the second half against Texas. The Sooners just rolled up point after point against that Texas defense. I'm anxious to see how much of a leash Williams has, if at all. Maybe it's full playbook, run the whole offense. But it's going to be interesting to see with the first start at home, coming off that emotional comeback win against Texas, how he handles that situation.
Yeah, they're sitting high right now, coming off that win, but the season's not over. So you would think that they'd reel all that in, say, okay, that's done, let's move on. This is the back half of the season. You would hope that the playbook's opened up a little bit more, right? And I know the quarterback situation kind of dictates that, but if it's Williams, and we all anticipate it is, it does change up the play calling a little bit. I want to give a lot more credit to the offensive line. I think they played a lot better against Texas on Saturday. I heard this driving in, and I was like, yeah, no one's really talking about that. I mean, you mentioned the rushing yards. I know Texas defense is bad against the run, but you still got to have some big guys up front to clear some paths for you. I think that continues against a beat-up TCU team. We don't know who's going to play. We don't know. They're just beat up in some key spots. I feel like, I think it was it Kerry who said this morning before us, that, and I've said it before him, I'll go on record to say that, I think this could be a breakout game for OU in the offense. I think they're going to have a big, big night against TCU, and it starts with Caleb Williams followed by the play calling. I think there's going to be a lot of rushing yards in this one, a lot of them.
Yeah, TCU's giving them up, and by the way, this, the defensive mastermind idea of Gary Patterson, which, he earned it to a certain degree, but it doesn't work against Lincoln Riley. This has been a game that Oklahoma has consistently, since Riley's been on campus, packed on the points. I'm efforting schedule.
You looking for pass scores?
Yes.
FBS schedules.
33-14, so 33 a year ago. 28 the year before that. 52. Baker put up 41 and 38.
Was that Big 12 championship and then 38 in the regular season.
Where they just other way around, other 38 way around. And 41. But that 30, it was 38 to 7, and they kind of pulled back the reins.
Yeah. They that game exploded in Norman. In the first quarter.
Yeah, 52 in 2016.
Yeah, they know how to, Lincoln knows how to scheme against that.
And then 30 in 2015.
Yeah.
I was that. Matter of fact, you know what? The last game I attended was that game.
Really?
30-29. Stephen Parker batted down the two-point conversion. After the Sooners were romping in the first half.
You're right.
Mayfield got a concussion, went out, and it was hold on to your hat trying to save that game, and Stephen Parker did. I haven't been to a game since the south end zone was changed.
Really?
The seating, yeah. I haven't been there.
Oh, that's great.
I'll be there on Saturday.
That's great. I'll be watching from a splash pad.
Yikes.
I did confirm there are adult beverages served at this place. So,
you mentioned TCU beat up Max Duggan, Zach Evans, a couple of the guys that TCU needs to have on offense.
Anything
to be
official,
able to,
or is it just a it was lot just, of questionable?
It was just Patterson. It was literally Patterson that said they're questionable. I don't know if he's just trying to mess with people or what.
All right, well, if OU's not telling us who their starters
yeah,
are.
Maybe that's
that
what it
quarterback,
is.
I'm going to say now, my guy's hurt.
They both did get dinged up a little bit in the game last week against Texas Tech. So it's not like he just pulled it out of thin air.
Yeah.
I mean, it really did happen. But
they scored a lot of points in that game.
They did score a lot of points, and that leads to the final question in this game. Can they exploit the clear weakness that is the Oklahoma secondary?
I mean, you got your number one guy and then you got your number two guy, but there's still D1 quarterbacks and there's still, it's a D1 staff. So they'll scheme for success against how they know how to exploit OU's defense.
Yeah. Throw it at four.
Yeah.
Or seven.
Yeah. So I think, there will be some early success. You know, we could see something like the spread was, 13.5? So we can see a lot of points scored. I wonder what the over-under is.
13.5, 63.5.
Yeah, we could see a lot of points. I mean, it's just a given, right? OU's going to give up points.
I think so.
Yeah.
Seems like it. That's probably been one of the most disappointing parts of this season, is that Oklahoma defense hasn't continued – what they started last year.
Right.
And so, you can say there's reasons, but you can't be completely – you know what's amazing to me?
What's that?
We're in year 5.
You just get a text message?
People don't know we're on the air till 10. It's shocking. I know people. Listen, there's 73 people in our college pick'em.
My phone blows up every morning with their opinions. Our text line blows up every day.
Anyhow, it's going to be fun. We'll see how OU can handle TCU. They are. Lincoln Riley is one of the few coaches in the Big 12 that has unlocked the secret to defeating Gary Patterson's defenses consistently year after year. Let's see if they can do it tomorrow with a true freshman quarterback making his first start. Now, let me ask you this. Let's wait to see the results.
Okay. Ask me on Monday.
Yeah, let's wait to see the results because it may be a moot point. If Williams plays great, then there is no talk.
No.
If he doesn't,
let's just see what happens.
Could be a giant mess on Lincoln Riley's hands.
Yep. Let's just see what happens.
All right. NFL weekend, weak in a word. Not very many good games. Some teams that were supposed to be pretty good that aren't. Some teams that are a little bit better than we thought, but still not good. And that just leads to a pretty bad weekend. The Chargers, Baltimore has to be the headliner. A couple of 4-1 teams at Baltimore. The problem there is it's a West Coast team traveling across the country to play at noon. That normally doesn't work out very well for the West Coast teams. Chicago.
Right.
Chicago's 3-2. I had them in the bottom three the first couple of weeks. All of a sudden now Justin Fields at the quarterback. They're 3-2 playing the Packers at 4-1, so that's at least a game with two teams with a winning record. Not very many of those this week. Here's one with two teams with losing records that is kind of surprising. Kansas City and Washington, both with losing records. I don't think anybody saw that coming 5 weeks in.
Yeah.
Especially Kansas City side. got the battle of former OU quarterbacks. That's the game with winning records, Arizona-Cleveland. I think that's a really big win if Baker can pull it off for Cleveland, because although they're 3-2, they played the Chargers off their shoes out there last week. Should have won that game at L.A., didn't do it. First week before Kansas City kind of hit the skids, you know, had that game won, didn't pull it off. Mahomes hit the long pass to Tyreek, and then everything kind of turned around. And all of a sudden, you feel like Cleveland's way better than 3-3, but if they can't beat Arizona, that's what they are, even 3-3, and then struggling to find a way to get back into that AFC North race, especially if Baltimore can beat the Chargers.
Well, how about the other side of it? If Cardinals beat the Browns, everyone, you know, they're undefeated, and everyone's kind of waiting them to have that loss. But if they beat the Browns, can we finally start talk about Cardinals being a top three team in this league?
Yeah, probably so. You know, they've got to win over the Rams, which is, you know, the Rams are one of the best teams in the league by far with a 4-1 record.
They squeaked by them, and they looked really, really good doing it.
Yeah, and they have looked good. Here's the problem. You don't know and you don't trust the health of Kyler Murray, because his track record in the NFL is such that he's going to miss a few games because he gets dinged. He's done a better job this year, I think, staying away from those hits that have caused the injuries and getting down. You know, he's always really good at sliding, but it's a little bit different world there than it was at Oklahoma for that year, and even at Texas A&M before that. You can't take those shots because eventually they take a toll on your body, and you know, he hasn't been there toward the end of seasons. He's done a better job so far in that regard. What about Dallas? That offense has been unstoppable so far. Even in the loss against Tampa Bay, they rolled up yards, they rolled up points, just not quite enough to beat the defending champs. They go to New England. If there's anybody that can scheme something around to try to make to put his guys in the best position to stop somebody, it's Bill Belichick. Even in, you know, the Brady comeback game, he still kind of held that offense down as much as anybody has. So is this maybe the week that a little bit of a blueprint kind of floats out there on how to stop the Dallas offense?
I don't see it, because the Dallas offense is so dynamic with the way Zeke is able to run the ball more efficiently this year. It's opening up a lot of things for Dak. We knew Dak could be Dak when he gets back. And the thing that stands out, the one stat, honestly, it stands out to me. It's so weird to me that I'm saying this. The Patriots are 2-3, all three losses at home.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's shocking.
And this game is at New England.
Yeah, it's at New England
so
afternoon.
It doesn't bode very well for New England. So I think Dallas's offense is rolling, but what's not getting enough credit, and it should, is their defense. Diggs, and their, I mean, we're at the point now, we go into a Dallas Cowboys game, and we're looking for Diggs to have an interception.
Yeah, like
when's it going to happen?
When's it coming? I mean, we were kind of joking around about that last Sunday on the text, you and Drew and I and Dakota. And, I mean, it literally wasn't a minute and a half later, there it was.
There it was. And I said that. I'm just sitting here watching the game waiting for Diggs to have an interception. I said something to that effect. And then, like you said, 10 minutes later, there it was. And I was like, amazing. I cannot believe this is happening.
And the way that, you know, he plays corner. And listen, it's easy to build this up higher than what it ought to be. But he has the skills, the ball skills, and the recovery speed. I mean, listen, he baited that throw. He literally held behind the receiver on that post route, hoping and wishing that they would throw it, because he knew he had the speed to be the receiver. He looked like the receiver high pointing that ball on a post pattern.
Yes.
That's exactly what it looked like. And he made that play just like the greats do. And, man, this topic has been something that's been talked about on these airwaves by multiple guys as far as why did the Cowboys draft CeeDee Lamb at that spot. Here in this draft and those picks are going to be just an absolute, like, like the test case for taking the best available player when it's your turn to make a draft pick. There's no doubt that the Cowboys' need was corner more than wide receiver. But there wasn't a corner worthy of that pick, and there damn sure wasn't a corner that was a better football player than CeeDee Lamb. And so the Cowboys draft CeeDee Lamb because he falls in their lap at the 17th pick. And then, oh, by the way, a round later, when it's their turn, who's sitting there? Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah.
And so there's no way you can get both of those players drafting them in opposite order. And that, my friends, is why you don't draft for need. You draft the best available player when it comes available to you. And then you make something else work the next time if you want to do it that way.
How much of a dream scenario would it be? I know it's October 15th, so we can't look this too far ahead. But what if, you know, if it's Dallas representing the NFC in the Super Bowl versus the Bills? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How cool would that be? And then you got Diggs versus Diggs.
Yeah, and throwback to the 90s.
Yeah.
Those two Super Bowls.
So many stories. I'm coming from a reporter, from a journalist standpoint of the storylines there. You're going back to the Dallas versus Bills games of past, and then you got the brother versus brother.
That'd be pretty good stuff.
That'd be fun.
It would be a lot of fun.
Long way down the road.
Mainly because the Cowboys are in the Super Bowl. I don't care who they play.
Yeah, that's true, too.
You know what would be fun, though? It'd be nice if they could play, I don't know, Miami. If we're going to dream, why don't they let somebody that's no good play in the Super Bowl?
It wouldn't be called the Super Bowl. It'd be something else.
Toilet Bowl.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Wouldn't be fun.
Real quick, baseball playoffs. The ALCS starts tonight with Boston and Houston. Both of those teams won their ALDS is 3-1. And then it's going to be a rematch in the NLCS between the Braves and the Dodgers. That Dodgers-Giants series was a classic 5-gamer last night, ending with a 2-1 Dodgers win in Game 5. They win the series 3-2. I think each team won 12 of the 24 they played this season. And Cody Bellinger has the game-winning hit in the ninth inning for the Dodgers. You know what he was in for the season against the Giants for the year?
No, what?
5 of 62. He was hitting .08.
Wow.
.08 against the Giants for the year. And he hits the game-winning single up the middle. Max Scherzer gets the save. First save of his career to close that one out. A lot of talk, I'm sure, is going to happen about the check swing that ended the game. That's such a tough call for those umpires in real speed to try to get that right. You know, the replays and slow it down, it's pretty obvious that it wasn't a swing. And the call was probably wrong. Definitely wrong. But that, you know, that's just that's part of the love of baseball, right?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't bother me. I like that kind of stuff.
You know, it just those bang bang plays. You let it go.
Yeah. What do you think? Real quick, who do you got? You want to pick the series?
Well, I had the White Sox and the Dodgers to start. Obviously, that can't happen. And I felt a little fence rider because even that Houston-White Sox series, I said Houston's the better team. I just had the White Sox. So, I don't know. Boston was not better than the Rays, but they beat them. You know, Boston just kind of seems to do this. But I'll take Houston and L.A., that hatred back in the World Series.
Oh, man. Might start a riot. Unfortunately,
I'd like to see it be Braves-Boston myself.
I'd like to see Braves get back in it. I don't know if that will happen, though. Unfortunately, I'm sticking with the Houston Astros and the Dodgers. Yeah.
Houston, L.A.?
Yeah.
But I'm rooting for Boston and Atlanta.
No, don't kid yourself. I'm rooting for those two, too. Those two as well, yes.
Really just not the Astros, right?
Anybody but, right?
I have a feeling my phone's fixed to blow up. I think that's right.
They should have banned in the postseason.
I think a lot of people think that way, that care about baseball.
Yeah.
Thought it was a little bit of a low blow for the White Sox to start, just because Houston hit great one game, start acting like they're cheating again. So then Houston went to Chicago and put 10 on their head and went,
well, hey, listen,
are we cheating here too?
Listen. You shouldn't have cheated in the first place. And that was
it's always going to be around.
Yeah.
Everyone have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.